Very interested in this. How do I change this from here? Okay. All right, so as a retired, I want to focus on a class of string theory models, which actually Fernando has and his collaborators have been developing over the years. Let me begin with some general remarks. So any theory of spontaneous breaking needs to, it should necessarily be a supergravity, because you need to fine tune the first magical constant to zero, which you cannot do in global supersymmetry. And of course, you can always add explicit symmetry breaking terms to global supersymmetry to the MSSM, but there's far too much arbitrariness there. So we need a supergravity with a scalar potential, which then should have a minimum that breaks supersymmetry from spontaneously. And of course, if once you're in sigma, obviously you need to complete this theory. Ultraviolet completeness requires that we should embed this in string theory. And of course, we hope that there are some constraints coming from string theory. So what are the experimental inputs that you need to put in? Well, the first magical constant should be very small. There should be no light scalars which suffer the gravitational strength. Partner masses should be greater than or around the 100 GeV scale. The lighter stakes, which is bounded below. And we have to suppress FCNC. And there should be no large CP validating spaces. Unfortunately, we cannot predict any of these, or these do not emerge naturally, so we need to put them in as experimental constraints. I can't show you.
Oh, is it a picture missing?
Yeah, it's not a picture, it's an equation actually, but.
It must have been wrong. We have a filter on
Well, I don't know. It doesn't matter too much. It's the supergravity action in superspace form. So now you know what it is. It doesn't matter. Everybody knows the thing. Okay. So these are just the basic inputs of supergravity. You have a Kähler potential, which is a real analytic function, a superpotential, which is holomorphic function, a gauge coupling function, which is holomorphic. And at the two derivative level, the action is completely determined by these functions. So the W has no perturbative corrections. F has only one loop corrections, and K can have both types of both perturbative and non-perturbative corrections. The string theory input is, well, what is the classical Kähler potential and the W, and also, of course, the F, I missed out there, should be given. We hope to get those from string theory. And we separate the types of chiral fields that you have into so-called moduli, which will be gauge singlets. And we have a bunch of MSSM fields. And then we expand the W and the K in terms of the, in powers of the MSSM fields in this fashion. The supergravity potential takes this form. So you have the square of the F terms, and in a global supersymmetry, of course, you will have the first term and the last term, which are both positive definite, and the third term is peculiarity of supergravity, the minus 3 times m3/2 to the phi, which when phi is stabilized at a minimum turns out to be the gravitational mass. Well, m3/2 is defined there, and this K is the Kähler metric, which is the double derivative of the so-called Kähler potential, which I introduced before.
and then these are the so-called D terms, the D there. And well, this is familiar to you. Now, supersymmetric breaking requires that one or more of these F terms, or, well, I didn't put D, I put it in, but or, and or a D term should be non-zero. And furthermore, that in order to have almost zero cosmological constant, this F squared should be, the sum of the F squared should be 3 times M squared 3 halves. I just made a comment about gauge-mediated supersymmetric breaking, which is usually discussed just in the context of global supersymmetry, but you know, ultimately they also should have to embed this in supergravity. So once you have this, you can extract the relevant parameters for LHC physics, for MSSM, supersymmetry breaking from these formulae, which was discussed by Kapunowski and Louis, and also by these people, Brignol et al. And these are a bunch of formulae. Once you are given this, these formulae, that, this some expression for the K and so on, then you can work out what these supersymmetric breaking parameters are from these formulae here. So that A is the triple scalar coupling, M squared alpha beta bar is the scalar mass matrix, capital M is the gauge inner mass, and the B mu, the mu is the Higgsino mass, and the B mu is the determines or needs, well, is the additional piece that you get when you break the supersymmetry. Yeah.
Well, zero or small. I mean, this is so this is a contribution of the cosmological constant, the first term there. So what I'm going to talk about when I derive the soft masses will this will be highly suppressed, and then the parameters that I get will not really depend on this so-called uplift, which is necessary to take it up to zero. Okay, so the generic possibilities for supersymmetric breaking in the supergravity context would be this, well, there's this so-called M sugra, where typically the soft masses are of the order of M3 half. So this will be the sort of generic situation that you might get in supergravity. And the quantum effects will be suppressed, and but because there are cosmological problems, if M soft mass, if the soft mass is around the TeV, then the gravitinium is on the order of a TeV. Then there is a class of M sugra models, or sugra models, which one might call sequestered, where the, well, no scale is, of course, the simplest example of this. And then this type of model that I'm going to discuss are this so-called extended no scale type, where the soft masses are much less than the gravitational mass. And the quantum effects either are comparable or larger than the classical effects. And the AMSB contribution is a special case, which is an additional contribution of the same order or larger. And it turns out in this particular case that they will be the largest contribution, at least over the gauge inner mass. And then, of course, if you want gauge-mediated supersymmetric breaking, well, from a string theory point of view, I think it's somewhat more, somewhat unnatural, because you want to push the M3 halves, the gravitational mass, well below the soft mass scale, 1 TeV scale, because otherwise, you know, generically supergravity will give you some, supergravity effects will dominate. So you need some additional sector and so on, and from a landscape point of view, I believe this is more highly fine-tuned than the scenario that I'm going to discuss. I'm not going to say much more about that. Anyway, so that's just,
Is this happening because you're on a computer here rather than
I don't know. It should, I have, It may be because this was done on a Mac, but I think in principle it shouldn't have happened. Yes, I have it. I mean, I can. Yeah, sure. What? Yeah, but that was not the. Well, I could. That was a PDF version which I prepared initially because I. Yeah, okay. Shall I just bring it in?
Okay.
This is what happens when you're confused.
Yeah, right. Okay, so let me just go to the previous. Yeah. Okay, so from
point of view,
so as I said, the input would be this scalar potential and the super potential. So this is the scalar potential for the moduli. So it depends on the Keller moduli. So nu is basically the volume of the Calabi-Yau space. So we are talking about a type 2B compactified on a Calabi-Yau orientifold whose volume is this nu, which is a function of the real parts of some Keller moduli. So there can be some H11 Keller moduli and some H12 of complex structure moduli. And then S is the dilaton, which is twice the coupling constant when S is fixed. So you can have a scenario with just one Keller modulus with a racetrack and which would find, and you could find a minimum there which breaks supersymmetry. These class of models that I'm going to be discussing, which were developed by Conrad Quevedo, Berglund, Balasubramaniam, and various collaborators over the years, is this particular class of models, so called Swiss cheese Calabi-Yaus, where the volume is controlled by some one large modulus tau, and then there are a bunch of small moduli. And the point is that this large modulus is exponentially large in the small moduli. And in these type of models, you have a minimum which is suppressed by the volume. It's m squared 3/2 divided by the volume, or W squared divided by volume cubed. And these non-perturbative terms are roughly going like 1 over the volume. And M string goes like 1 over the square root of the volume, and Kaluza-Klein masses go like volume to the 2/3. So these would be estimates of what the supersymmetric breaking would be in these various moduli. And typically, the largest contribution is coming from this large modulus T, which I call T, But then you could have, if you want to uplift the cosmology, the potential to some zero or slightly positive cosmology constant, you might expect some additional supersymmetry breaking.
Between, oh, this is for the small Keller moduli. Okay. And the other is, so this is for the complex structure, and this is for the data. Those are, of course, just top of bar, so as much. So
the matter could be on some DC brain at a singularity or some DCM brain wrapping for cycle. I mean, these people here have discussed this. And it turns out that in this interesting class of models that the dynamics drives the standard model cycle to below the string scale. And I'm not going to discuss that very much, but the point is that you get, so you get at the minute, so you get a potential which looks like that, and then there are these D-term potentials, and so this is the structure. So I lifted this out of one of Fernando's papers. So you have supersymmetry breaking from some large cycle modulus, and the small cycle of which you need to have at least one. Is stabilized by non-perturbative effects, and the MSSM cycle, which is this one, shrinks below the string scale. And assuming, so this is under this assumption that the charged matter fields, which seem to be MSSM fields, are zero in the vacuum. The D term is also going to be effectively zero. And the minimization, this is this relation that I mentioned, that that this volume, 1 over the volume, is controlled by the small modulus here at the minimum. And the Suzy breaking, as I mentioned, is largely in this T modulus direction. Yeah.
Order of 1 over volume square, but I mean the minimum is 1 over volume cube.
Yeah, so that's why you need to set to, if
you've. You have to set here, yeah. Assume
yeah.
So that it's 0.
Right. Oh, I didn't say that. Yes, yeah, that's what I meant. So minimize and find
the F term, so you. So as I said before, the minimum is some slightly negative volume suppression minimum, and a tau s a is some group theoretic factor coming from this bunch of C's, the KKLD type situation where you have some non-perturbative effect, and a is would be typically if you have a SUN group with some n seven brains wrapping a four cycle, this would be like 1/n. Or 2 pi over n. So then the mass squared in this situation, the scalar mass squared, is given by this formula here, and it's controlled by, well, that's the cosmology constant piece, but and that's the Gravitino mass squared, and then you have a bunch of, so you have to evaluate these Riemann tensors. And so you need the F terms, which you can calculate, the large F term and the small modulus F term. And then you can compute at least within some, so there is a formula for this embedding in this paper of Grania, Grimm, Jockels, and Louis. And using that formula, you can actually calculate this matter metric. So here I've simplified to the case of just one big modulus and one small modulus. Assume that the matter, the MS.
That's fine.
So you start with the new plus. So this is so. You express the new in terms of, so new is some dijk, tijtjk, and then you can express that in terms of the of the...
Of so you say that's an exact result, or is this up to order one of the volume, or what is this result, this thing?
What?
It's just an approximation response from one of the volume.
Yeah, there would be additional...
So, and then what order do they come in? One over the volume, or do they come in...
This would be... So, if I take the expression and... So then you would have higher order alpha prime corrections, folks.
But I mean, you include alpha prime corrections in this experiment,
so you assume already
a shape.
Yes.
But they might be different.
They might be different from...
I mean, if you say they have one over volume corrections, they must come up. So they can be in these alpha prime corrections. Lewis and collaborators concluded the alpha prime
corrections. You mean for an additional term here? I think what they did was to compute.
I think that they were computed, and then this had the log of volume of psi, that's matter plus, without matter. And then with matter, they have the log of the volume, and then the matter was psi.
Right.
So this is assuming that the whole thing goes through, but it's an assumption.
Yes.
And it's okay up to. An expansion around the volume.
Yes.
That is hitting this. You have volume plus psi over 2.
So I'm not quite sure what you're worried about there. Yeah, I mean, it's.
No, there is an issue because I mean, you could have just written this 1 over volume and said plus higher.
Yeah, sure.
But you're looking 1 over volume plus psi, and that convention is coming with that set to see what the other corrections will be there.
And in your previous slide, you had the scalar masses, which went as 1 over the volume and plus corrections that come in one over the volume.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that we don't know how they look like.
No, but for the what I'm going to say, it doesn't matter because
the fact that is exactly matters how those corrections look like for the sign of the scalar.
For that, yes, but it is not going to affect anything that I say because it's still the diagonal piece is still proportional to psi, right? So there is no additional, there is no way you can get some additional correction to the diagonal piece, right? So it's so essentially the question here is the reason for doing this is the evaluation of FCNC, right? For that, that's irrelevant. It's only the fact that it is this here. If I did not have this, I wouldn't have any diagonal piece at all. Okay, so the diagonal piece certainly cannot be larger than that. Okay, so there is no way that the diagonal piece can be larger than that. Okay, so this formula is useful for, well, first of all, let's assume that this piece is not there. Okay, so if it's not there, you can evaluate, and then this is the value that you get. For the diagonal piece, which is the piece which is proportional to the matter metric. Okay? So, but now the problem is when you put that in there, and for this calculation, you can put this to zero. It doesn't matter. Okay? If you put it to zero, then you wouldn't have any diagonal piece at all. But you have this, you have a piece here, K primed, which is not proportional to the kinetic metric, which in principle can give you FCNC. And the problem is that phenomenology requires that the delta m squared coming from here should be suppressed by a factor of about 10 to the minus 3 compared to if you want TeV scale masses, then you need to suppress it by a factor of 10 cubed. So how do you achieve that? Well, somehow you have to argue that this small, so omega 1, omega s is the 1-1 form, the harmonic 1-1 form, which is associated with the small modulus. Omega b is the one associated with the large modulus.
So the question is, so these have to be evaluated to compute the matter masses, the soft masses. You have to evaluate these at the position of the D3 branch singularity or the cycle which wrapped by the D7 branch. And so so you would like to argue that omega s is much smaller than omega b at that point. So I don't have a rigorous argument, but Joe Conlon pointed out to me that there is an old argument by Andy Lutkin, who was a student of Candelas, that at least in an uncompact case, you could argue that this omega s falls off like 1 over r to the 6, where r is the distance to the location of the D3 brain or the cycle, or the standard model cycle. In which case, if you want this suppression, then you want, compared to the classical scalar mass, then this volume has to be larger than 10 to the 12. So we should mean that a string scale of less than 10 to the 12 GeV. So this is sort of, this kind of scenario would be consistent with this old work of Conlon, Kevedian and company.
The
hierarchy between those
coefficients? No.
This is geometric coefficients.
So what Andy Rifkin did was to solve the Laplace equation in an uncompact space, right? And he also assumes, so where the small cycle, if you assume that the small cycle is a blow up by a P2 of singularity, then in the non-compact case, you solve the equation, then you find that it drops off at r to the 6. I don't have a logical intuition for why it should drop at 1 over r to the 6. You can imagine that it's sort of support at the is localized, and then it drops off at some power, but the r to the 6, supposing I have to do the calculation. So. In fact, Joe was first thinking that he just falls off r to the 4, but then he from this paragraph. So, alternatively, of course, you could compact pi with 1 scalar modulus, but I'm not going to discuss that situation anymore. Okay, so in such situations, we have the Gugino masses suppressed. So, this is this expression for K, the scalar masses. And I'm now assuming that there is a large enough volume such that the CNC is suppressed. And then again, for the other parameters, you have these values here. And some of them may, depend on having some uplift. But, so now let's discuss what the one-loop effects are. So one, there are two ways of approaching this. One is to just take this as an effective field theory and do the Kaulmann-Weinberg calculation. These were originally done by in a series of papers by Gaia and Jain, and then later on with Brent Nelson, a whole series of papers. And these people here extracted the corrections to the potential and to the soft masses coming from these one-loop effects. If you use those and you tune the cosmological constant to 0, which is to impose this condition here, then you get some contribution and additional contribution to the soft masses of this order here, where H21 is the number of complex structure moduli. And if you want guts, then you would like to have M string greater than or equal to around, at least around the scale of the gut. But on the other hand, there are these. No, these are local models in which it is the string scale which comes in. So, right? I mean, so effectively, it's like a D3 brain, right? So, there are no standard model Kaluza-Klein modes. Yeah, so that's right. So these people here, Berg, Huck, and some other people.
Of course. And Ciccoli and various people here, plus collaborators, estimated these quantum the string loop corrections, and now we can compare these. So they estimated this correction to be so much, and if you compare with the field theory, then you find that lambda is of this order. And but then, if you so this here is an assumption. There's additional beta piece here, but you might expect that there is such a correction to the matter metric, and then you would generate soft mass contributions of this order. So this would imply that M string goes like that. That's the same. Yes. Right. Yeah. And also, I mean, I think the important point is that it's the leading term, what you might guess would be have been the leading term, which is be 1 over t plus e bar term, is canceled. And it's a subleading term which comes in. And but here, you see, that would then require, as I discussed in the same, so that if you want to compare with the effective field theory calculation, then you see that this you should impose this constraint on the beta, that f of 3 minus beta is equal to 0. Well, let me skip over all this. So I'm discussing here more general situations, where more general than the big cause calculation. But I don't know, maybe I should skip these and go on to anomaly mediation stuff, because I think most people are interested in that. So at the end of the day,
you take the cutoff dependent loop calculation, you compare it to the string calculation, and you're finding that there's a meaningful comparison there, that you're getting a...
There's a meaningful comparison, except if, but if you're in a more general situation than the one that discussed, then you would get larger quantum corrections, which would tend to destabilize the classical vacuum that you got in the LBS situation. So you would have quantum contributions destabilizing the classical vacuum. If you have this more, some more general situation of supersymmetry breaking, loop corrections.
What more general loop corrections?
Well, now where you are forcing me to go back, let's talk about that privately. So given such a situation where both the classical contribution to the submasses as well as the one-loop quantum contributions are highly suppressed, you might ask whether there are other effects. And one obvious effect is the so-called anomaly-mediated supersymmetry breaking effect, which typically will also occur in a supergravity theory. So how does it come about? And I claim this the entire and the correct version of anomaly-mediated supersymmetry breaking is implicitly contained in an old calculation of Kapanowski and Louis, which is going back to 1995. It was rediscovered by various people, but they somehow, I don't know, ignored the Kapanowski-Louis paper. But so let me go through that. So
Of course.
Yes.
Well, it depends. Again, it's a complicated story. I can go into that in detail. I can spend, or maybe I should have given a seminar on that, because it's a long, complicated, tortuous story where there are errors, canceling errors.
So that doesn't make a difference.
What?
We already recorded your yes, so it doesn't make a difference what you say.
That's okay. So the issue is the following. So this is where that formula which I lost initially comes in. So we had this expression for the supergravity. In the supergravity frame, we had this, maybe I should write it down here, please, the chalk.
Yes, sir. You didn't bring any white chalk down?
Oh, white chalk.
No, so you have to use the color chalk over it, unless you can find some stubs in the...
Oh, that's good. So we had this... Lagrangian for Lagrangian density, which had this period stuff, d4 theta times d4 theta. So there is a superfibre determinant. Then you have d2 theta terms, which these things I'll explain in a minute, times superpotential. Plus this so-called F times the gating of plus that is the entire Lagrangian in supergravity coupled to super Young Mills. Very elegant, almost as nice as Einstein's action. Of course, if you expand these in components, you get two pages. But in superspace formulation, this is it. And W and F are holomorphic functions. They're chiral scalar functions, whereas K is a real superfield. And W alpha is also a chiral superfield. And this is the gauge F squared is hidden in here. So F squared is. F squared is in here. So
F is little f. The real part of little f is like the gauge coupling. And if you take the Haas component of F, you project, you get the Gaginor mass. So the Gaginor mass, ma over g squared, m over g squared, is basically the F term of that, the F term of this guy here. However, the point is that this is not quite correct, because you have to first, this is not in the right frame. So this is not in the Einstein frame, and also it's not in the frame in which the kinetic terms for the metric for the scalar fields looks like K alpha beta bar. So you want a metric in which you have root GR and you have this kind of kinetic term for the scalars. To get to that, you have to do a rotation. So this is done in component form in Weissenbacher. Okay? Those rotations are completely equivalent to doing this rotation on the metric fields, basically they are rotations on the metric fields. They are like conformal transformation, the Weyl transformation. They are generalized Weyl transformations. That's what they are, or super Weyl transformations. And gauge fixing, these rotation parameters need to be fixed by this constraint here if you want to get to this frame here, if you want to get to the Einstein frame. So what this equation means is that, so this is a chiral field, it's complex conjugate, and K, of course, is a real real superfield, which has a Lohs component, a fermionic component, an F term, plus theta cube terms and theta to the 4 terms. Okay? What this instruction tells you is to truncate it at the F terms. Yeah?
We have lots of taus already in the talk, so they're not related to...
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Sorry. These are... Yes, good point. This stuff has nothing whatsoever to do with the field.
So what are these fields?
These are field reduced. So these are transformations that you have to do. For example, this E has to go like E to the minus 6 tau. This E goes, this is equivalent to this transformation 2 tau plus 2 tau bar times E. And so this also implies that the fermionic derivatives have a certain transformation because you have to go to the frame bundle to go to the Fabian frame in order to do these transformations. But these are transformations. Basically, you can think of them as wild transformations.
That's what tau is. What's tau R?
Tau.
What's
tower
and
tower? Yeah, I'm coming to this. Yeah. So these are a bunch of chiral fields, and this is the instruction. And so the tau is the rotation that you need to do to get to the Einstein Keller frame. Tau r, so after having done this, for the matter fields, you want to do a further transformation if you want to normalize them canonically. Okay? So that's the tau r. Tau I is a field redefinition that you need to get canonical kinetic terms for the gauge fields. Okay, so that because this coupling is, overall coupling is multiplying the gauge field strengths, so you want to get to the canonical normalization there. So now this is a formula which is valid, supposed to be valid at some string scale or gut scale or whatever your high scale is. So these are transformations that you need to do. And the point is that when you do these transformations, now in Weissenbacher, none of these terms are there because they are doing purely classical physics. But when you do these transformations, there is a Jacobian in the measure of the functional integral, and that's the easiest way of seeing it. And so because of this Jacobian, there are these terms, the additional terms, which are going to be proportional to W alpha, W alpha. Okay, so it's like when you do a chiral rotation in a theory, if there's an anomaly, there will be some piece which is dependent on some group theory coefficient like this times F squared. Okay, so this is a generalization of that, and then what I'm saying is that there are three such terms coming in associated with each of these rotations that you do. And
So tau I on the next slide and tau r MSSM.
No, they're coming from so normalizing correctly the kinetic terms.
And why do they have different normalization? I mean,
they don't have different normalization. It's just that you need to go from this frame to a frame if you want to identify the masses correctly. You need to, for the standard model masses, you need to get to the canonical normalization, right? So that means you need to take this R up here, okay? So you need to redefine.
But don't need to do that for the
amplitude. Yeah. And then you need to do that for the gauge fields as well.
But then that should be the same as R.
Maybe it helps if you wrote what transformation was where the tau is appearing, because you're redefining these fields in a tau-dependent way, right? That's what you mean.
Yes.
Could you write out what the transformation is for tau and tau?
Oh,
For the which? For the
tower and tower. You wrote it explicitly about tower.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so they're in my old paper, but I you have to take these out and so you do a transformation like that, right, on these. So these are so I call them C, right? So these C's, the standard molecules, okay, have to be transformed like that.
So the same kind of scaling as
same kind of scaling as we did.
And that generates
an anomaly which is proportional to the. So this is R. If those matter fields is R in some representation R, so this is what you get. So this is the trace of the square alpha generating that representation. Okay. And A is the group. I'm sorry. I've confused the notation. I changed my notation so this should all be, there should be either A or an I in all of these. Sorry. So the reason I changed is for a very similar reason as before, because I used I for to label my Kähler moduli. And then this is not the Kähler moduli index, this should be the group index, and I was changing it and this morning or something, and then I forgot to change all of them. So these should be all A's, sorry, and there should be no I here, and this should be an A, okay? So wherever you see I, translate it to A, sorry.
That's right.
So this is what that is going to do is to, so this is
I've replaced this A, F by an H now. Okay. So I need to do a transformation on that in order to absorb this. In transformation on the V, the superfield, the prepotential.
It's not taking the Wessel-Mino gauge. This is the thing that's diagonalizing that.
Yes. This is not taking the Wessel-Mino gauge now. So
that's what I've said here. So this last transformation is what is needed to get canonical kinetic terms for the gauge fields. Okay, so I've gone back to I, but this should be A. It labels the group. Okay, whether it's SU3, SU2, or U1, that's all. So this is valid at high scale. Now, if I want to evolve this down to a low scale, then the F, the original classical coupling, evolves, and it only changes at one loop, and you get this. You need to change F to this beta function coefficient times log lambda over mu. Where B is the one loop beta function coefficient.
For the same reason as it is non-Riemannized it's the same, yeah. It's just this axion shift argument. So if you take now that formula that I had for H, which the tau and so on, and use those relations that I had for the taus in order to fix the gauge. Well, for 1 over g squared, I get this formula here, which is in fact the integrated form of the NSBZ beta function. Okay? And now it looks like, so what I've done is really resum all lot of one loop effects. I mean, all anomalies, all this is coming from anomalies,
which are one loop. Right, but what's happened is that all those one loop effects have got summed up, and you have something which effectively looks like a formula which is valid to all orders. It's really a summation of one loop effect, actually.
So this is what I told you yesterday. It's in the
global form. I mean, so this is really my extension here is. A trivial extension to supergravity, but I should have put their name in there. But Akani Hamed and Murayama in 98 or something gave this argument for the NSBZ beta function. But now you can take the F term of that, because I had a superfield relation, okay? And you can take the F term of that, and then you have an NSBZ type expression for the Gaussian mass structure. Gaussian mass divided by G squared, and you see this characteristic 1 over 1 minus T G phi squared, G squared term, which occurs in the NSBZ beta function, if you remember that. So to one loop order, so I claim I have a multiple expression which is valid to all orders, but to one loop order at least, let me also make the comment that this is presumably valid just for the Wilsonian action. We can discuss this issue after the talk if you like about the Wilsonian and 1PI and so on. But one loop order, you generate these Gaussian masses. And now if I use this, so where I have used here the expression for the large modulus F term, this one here, and I've used this expression for the matter metric, and I put that in, and this is what I get for the Gaussian mass. And incidentally, this is just a curiosity, it agrees with this original RS formula that they gave in the original paper for the Gaussian masses, where they just said it is a FC over C is N3 halves. Yeah.
Can I
come here? Yeah.
So this is a crucial thing, because you're using K is the standard no scale.
Yes.
And in the original RS, they didn't. They just had a general normalization. This is how this is what we get the beta. But if you could take the no scale carrier potential and do it with the forward normalization with other dependence that people have considered for the last 10 years, and then you get a zero.
Yes, that's right.
And that's a crucial difference.
That's a crucial difference, yeah. Right, so I didn't want to get into that, but we can.
No, but that's a crucial thing.
Yes.
That's what makes different from what you're saying to what you're saying.
That's what, but what I'm saying is that RS in the original paper did not have all that.
Because they were.
Yeah. They identified FCOC with the, or FC with M3 halves. And then they said, this is what I get for the Gaussian mass. I'm just saying that.
Even them and everybody else, if you ask them what is the Gaussian masses for the non-scale model,
yes,
everybody will say it's
that's the, right, that's right, that's right. So yeah, that's right, because they. So first of all, so I've deliberately avoided using conformal compensators. Any physical result should not depend on whether you have a conformal compensator or not. All these formulations of RS and all these other people who did anomaly mediation seem to depend explicitly, crucially, on using this conformal compensator formalism. I don't need a conformal compensator. I can use this. Conformal compensators mean you just put a CC bar here and a C cubed here. It's a fake. You then make these transformations into a fake symmetry. This is what you do with the conformal compensators. But I can do transformations. I can do field redefinitions without doing conformal compensators. This is what I'm doing here. I'm just doing field redefinitions and transformations by these taus, and that's enough to get any physical result, because all it depends is having the ease on the fact that the Jacobian that there is a Jacobian in the functional measure. And that Jacobian has effectively been calculated by Kapalnowski and Lewy. And it's basically, you can read it off from the standard anomaly by supersymmetrizing it, but it was also explicitly calculated in great detail by Kapalnowski and Lewy. That's all there is. That's the main message. And
you're saying that it agrees with the original AMSP formula means that the result is M is alpha, B alpha times M3 halves, like that. But if I had taken the RS reasoning and applied it to the no-scale model, I would have found zero.
I would not, well, it, that is the dispute. I mean, that is the dispute I would have with Pomerol and all these other people.
Right.
Yeah, right. So my claim is this is always what you get.
Right, so if I take Kaplan and Lewin and apply
yes, this is what you get. Right. Regardless of, yeah. So what about MSP for scalar masses? I claim there are no, again, I can, well, we are out of time, but if you want in private discussion, I can go into detail about why I think that there are no MSP for, no MSP for scalar masses.
The soundtrack here.
Loud and clear. But there is a way the scalar masses can arise. Once you have generated from AMSB, once you have generated Gaginer masses, and remember in our model, in this class of models, Gaginer masses are suppressed. But if you have large volumes which are larger than alpha over 4 pi, for example, 1 over volume which is smaller than alpha over 4 pi, then you know, they are suppressed below this. But once you have this, you can generate scalar masses from standard renormalization group evolution. And this is what's called in the literature Gaginer mediation. I mean, they had some higher dimensional argument for generating the Gaginer masses. But all I'm claiming is that you don't really need this higher dimensional argument. Here, AMSB can generate Gaginer masses. But from RG flow, you can generate scalar masses, and this is this expression that I have here from that. And these are always positive. Oh, one virtue here is that this Gaginer mediation always gives you positive mass square, and unlike AMSB, the traditional AMSB, which claim to calculate scalar masses, they end up getting a wrong result for lepton masses as well. Well, it's like garbage in, garbage out. So.
Mass squares are negative. You're saying it's not a problem just because it's been
calculated. No, it's zero. So it's zero anyway. So I'm claiming it is zero.
But their problem that things have been negative, and this, the instability of the scalar field you're saying is really not an issue if you calculate properly.
Oh yeah, right. Oh no. I'm saying that does not exist. Their formula is. So MSP scalar mass formula is incorrect because what they did, so that crucially depends on having this particular formalism of having this conformal compensator, mm-hmm. right?
But as a consequence, their physical discussion about these negative mass squared scalars is irrelevant. Because
yes, it's irrelevant. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yes. So, yeah.
So, what do you think went wrong with the conformal compensator calculation?
Let's hold it off. Okay, that's a long discussion. We can discuss later, or you can. I have explained this in my old paper from 2008, beginning of 2008, but we can discuss it.
It's an interesting story, though. It's worth hearing.
Yes. It's a convoluted story, though, but it's. Well, anyway, so let me just finish by saying that what we have basically is you have the Gaginer masses from this at the ultraviolet scale. You have generated the Gaginer masses from this AMSB effect, then from the Gaginer mediation, you can generate the scalar masses. And now the FCSC suppression is to be, if that is your squawk mass, then that's what you should compare with. And then the bound that we have on the volume is only 10 to the 5, which means if you're willing to fine-tune the superpotential, you might approach that. Well, he's not, but my collaborator is not, but I don't mind fine-tuning. Cliff doesn't mind
fine-tuning.
Anyway, so that's conclusion. So we have type 2B models with MSSM on D3 brands at a singularity of D7 brands, and then you have this classical soft masses which are highly suppressed, and these large volume
models need more than one Kähler modulus, and then the suppression of the FCNC gives you a lower bound on the volume. And then we looked at string one-loop corrections calculated in some models, and they show a cancellation at the leading order. And then we compared this with the effective field theory calculation, and we have a similar calculation, and similarly for the soft mass calculation. And finally, we in this class of models, with the volume being, say, larger than 10 to the 5, we find that the dominant contribution to the gauge inner masses is coming from MSB, and then RG evolution, namely gauge inner mediation, leads you to gives you the dominant contribution to the scalar masses. That's it. Also, I should mention the A term will also be generated by this gauge inner mediation. I didn't mention that. That's it.
Is there any further questions?
You mentioned in the last talk,
yes,
that there is no unwanted indication for scalar masses.
Yes.
Yes. Of course, can I about
yes.
So, I mean, normally when people discuss about unwanted indication, they start the.
Yes. I know. Yes. Yes.
So there thought to be, has been thought to be a very serious problem of the unwanted negation.
Of course, yes.
So what is the ingredient of the.
What is the what?
What is the new thing?
Yeah.
I mean, that led us to non unwanted negation.
Oh, okay.
Because I understand from the biocompensated comparison.
So that's what
it's just actually that there's some people here that may not want to hear the whole thing, and so we should let them escape, and then this will be it's interesting, but
it's a long
short version is that you just say they calculated it wrong, and that they got negative and negative. That's like,
we can discuss that
Anshuman's question as well, so
yeah.
One is the same, so
we can.
Okay, so let me thank. It's not bad. Okay.